I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Ken Rudin, political editor for NPR. Hi, everybody. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, yo, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How are we doing out there?
Hey.
Well, you know.
Well, check it out. You know, 100 days in and most Americans give Barack Obama pretty high marks. You know, people aren't all satisfied with his programs and his policies, but, you know, people seem to dig him pretty straight. You know what's interesting to me, getting on something Tavis said, you know, Tavis Smiley, what's up, dude? You know what? I don't know what the measure is when we look at Obama. I think that's the problem. I mean, you know, we've never seen any situation like this in American history where the country is so messed up. And, you know, so what's the measuring stick, Ruben?
That's an interesting question.
Ruben? Okay, Ken?
Oh, that I thought somebody else. Okay, yeah. Well, actually, yeah, I don't think the 100 days is as significant as the 2-year anniversary of Tell Me More, but it is still significant and nonetheless. And you say that we've never seen this kind of situation before in history. Actually, we have, and it's Franklin D. Roosevelt during the New Deal, bringing in the New Deal following the Depression. And I think what's interesting about the comparison between FDR and Barack Obama is that the two of them showed that they're both very confident people, especially with the American electorate, not confident, and in these uncertain economic times. We had uncertain economic times in 1933. We have it in 2009. And both have shown willingness to take risks. And we'll see how long, you know, whether it pans out.
That is an interesting question Jimmy asked, though, about what is the standard we should be using. I don't know, Arsalan, because obviously the popularity, you can't do better than that in terms of people saying they like the man. 2/3 of the country says that they approve of his performance. But what are those good measures, Arsalan?
Well, I think that, you know, especially after the, you know, last eight years of President George W. Bush with, you know, a hole in his Dixie cup, President Obama's cup is running over. I think that, you know, from domestic policies to foreign policy, you know, he has 8 or 9 major policy arenas that he's dealing with at once. And so, you know, he's there spinning dozens of plates at once. And I think that, you know, having these primetime press conferences really shows that not only is he in touch with the needs of the American people, but that he's doing everything that he needs to in order to address these issues.
I think we have Ruben now.
Yeah, hey.
Hey there.
How you doing?
Good.
I worry that all these pressers, you know, I think they speak more to the fact that Obama likes the sound of his own voice. That could just be me. Ruben, help me out here, bro.
Well, I like the way it breaks down. I mean, Arsalan's right to talk about foreign and domestic. Jimmy, you're right to talk about the difference between sort of substance and style. There's a lot of different ways to grade Obama. I give him overall a pretty solid, you know, B- in the overall, mind you. That's a lot. That's saying a lot because he's trying to do a lot. I think he gets a lot of credit for trying to do this much. He's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of confidence. But some of his policies, I think, are, frankly, mirror images of the Bush policies. I'm talking about the bailout, talking about the terror stuff. And so in that regard, some of the same folks who had concerns about whether Bush was doing the right thing now have concerns because Bush is doing the same thing, or Obama's doing the same thing. So in that regard, I think it's a solid grade. I think it's a solid performance. But a lot of people like the man and the personality much more than the policy.
But one thing to add, though, before we start talking about the first 100 days, and he is a second coming, the numbers that Barack Obama has in the poll, 62%, 64%, are the same exact numbers that George W. Bush had during his first 100 days. Obviously, things change, so let's not just go overboard on what 100 days is. It's only a little quick snapshot and nothing more.
And by the way, can we get some poll numbers on where the approval rating is for poor Joe Biden, who scared the heck out of me the other day. Now I'm afraid to get on airplanes.
Well, no, don't worry about that. He's now taking the Amtrak to Guadalajara. He's you know, it's safe.
Ruben's fixated on Joe Biden. Have you noticed that?
Oh, it's just like a minor story. The vice president says, don't fly.
Oh, Joe's like a hot potato, and you just can't trust what he says. You know, he's like that dude in your crew. You just want to go sit down somewhere. Just be like, just give him a hobby. Like go get the beer or something. You know, don't hang out with my people because there's no telling what you'll say.
Right.
You know what? But you know what, Ruben? A couple of weeks back, you made this really interesting point. You really went at Obama, and you were talking about how we might be grading him on the curve. You know what? And I think you might have something there.
Right. I mean, we are. There's a lot of folks out there who feel invested in Obama's presidency. They think it's too historic to fail, and they really feel like because they are so invested in it, they can't see the blemishes, even when the blemishes are right before them. Oftentimes, I
think that's called political capital, yo.
I will say that Obama, as a man, as a person, has done very well. The problem is he also made some bad decisions in his personnel. There was the Daschle snafu. There was the Richardson snafu. You know, where's our Surgeon General? We don't have one, and yet we have a virus sweeping the country. So there are other things in the entire administration, I think, that have not gone well. But as a man, as an individual, I think he's solid. It's just you take responsibility for everything. That's why they call it the Obama administration.
All right. We got Ruben's stamp of approval, and there's that. You know, but you know what's interesting? Also this week, you know, Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter flipped the script. My man went Republican, then he went Democrat. I don't know about that. And what flips me out about that is how can anybody trust a politician that's flipping and flopping like that?
Well, he became a Republican 40 years ago, I believe it was, 40 years ago. So he had kind of a good long run on that. But I'm sorry, do you guys want to hear there were two really interesting pieces of tape we have. One, I want to play a piece of tape from Arlen Specter where he discusses his decision to switch parties. This is not a romantic thing at all. This was not like love. This was an arranged marriage, thing one. And then we want to go right into RNC Chairman Michael Steele's reaction to it and hear both of those clips are.
Drop it.
I was unwilling to subject my 29-year record in the United States Senate to the Pennsylvania Republican primary electorate. But I am pleased to run in the primary on the Democratic ticket.
I'm sure his mama didn't raise him that way. You know, at least give me a call or give the party leadership a call and let us know this is what I'm thinking, this is where I'm going, so that, you know, you can be prepared.
See, his mama didn't raise him that way, Ken.
Well, actually, when I first heard that Arlen Specter was switching parties, I thought maybe he'd become a Republican. Because in many ways, you know, he's one of the three Republicans who voted for the stimulus package. He voted against some Supreme Court justice, voted against Robert Bork, one of the leaders against the Robert Bork nomination. But, I mean, he likes to piss off everybody. He did it with Democrats time and time again. The Democrats now welcome a senator with open arms, somebody who badgered Anita Hill during the Clarence Thomas hearing,
right.
Somebody who voted for John Roberts, who voted for Samuel Alito. So, you know, he's kind of – Arlen Specter has always been about Arlen Specter, mm-hmm. what does best for him. And obviously, he was not going to win a Republican primary next year, and that's why he switched parties.
But here's what I'm a little confused about is why are the Democrats so thrilled about this? He made it very clear he is not going to be a reliable 60th vote. And in fact, the very same day,
right.
He voted against the administration on a key budget bill. So that's – Ken, so I'm a little confused about what they're so excited
about. Well,
look,
but Ben Nelson, the Democrat from Nebraska, is not a reliable Democratic vote either, but he still has a D after his name. And when you have Supreme Court justices coming up with the Souter retirement just announced about to be announced, when you have health care about to be announced, to have 60 Ds, assuming we get Al Franken in Minnesota, that should happen.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. It's Ruben. This is Ruben. That's the whole notion of the 60s, and 60 is a magic number. Arlen Specter is not some rookie like Obama was coming out of Illinois, where basically he followed Harry Reid. Obama did everything Harry Reid wanted when he was in the Senate, sometimes to his regret later on casting some bad votes. I'll tell you what, Arlen Specter is going to be his own guy. The paradox for Democrats is they've been telling us all along that Arlen Specter is an independent. When he was a Republican, they said he was independent. Now he's a Democrat, they say, well, he'll fall in line. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I think he's going to be as independent as he ever was. But shame on Arlen Specter for one thing. That was the most stupid and arrogant thing I've ever heard a politician say. I'm not going to let my record be subjected to the wills of the electorate.
Yeah, I mean,
thank you, King Arlen.
This is Arslan. This is Arslan, and let no one be mistaken. You know, Arlen Specter is on political life support, and this was this was his political strategy at its best.
Do you really think he can win, Arslan?
I think he can. I mean, I think it was, you know, with former Congressman Pat Toomey, who represents the Club for Growth. I think, you know, who barely lost 51-49 in the 2004 Republican primary in Pennsylvania, you know, this was done by Arlen Specter to ensure that he would still be senator.
Like, Arslan, you're getting ahead of yourself. He's still got to beat the Democrats in the primary, and no Democrat in Pennsylvania is going to vote for Arlen Specter when they have a chance to vote for a real Democrat.
But when you have a Barack Obama and you have Ed Rendell and Bob Casey, and all the money out of the Philadelphia establishment on behalf of Arlen Specter, it's going to be very hard to get another Democrat to successfully challenge him in the primary.
Let me just jump in just briefly to say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with Ken Rudin, Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, and Arslan Iftikhar. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. You know, to me, it's just a question of trust. I can't trust dude. Dude just flip-flops like that after 40 years? What's up with that? That's like going from, you know, Jiffy to Goober all of a sudden. You know?
But they say, wait a minute, but they always say that it's not that they didn't change, that the party changed. You don't find that persuasive.
Actually, he might have something there. Yeah, he might have something.
Yeah, Arlen said
still.
The same thing 40 years ago. He used to be a Democrat, then he left to become a Republican, and back then he said, well, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The party left me.
Right.
No, that's a great. You got to give him that.
This
a great
is all
line.
About Arlen Specter.
Ken had it right. Arlen Specter is a lawyer who has one client, Arlen Specter.
That's right.
Not a lot
I'll
of love
that.
In the B shop for the
you
senator.
Know what? But it could really just come down to the fact that, you know, Specter wants to be on the winning team. And speaking of winning teams, oh my God, was anybody watching basketball last night? I'm tired from watching.
I'm still watching
the NBA playoffs. You know, the Chicago Bulls forced the Boston Celtics into triple overtime and game 7, and the winner will be facing the Orlando Magic. A-Train.
That's right. NBA playoffs, 40 games and 40 nights, winner go home. We've seen in the Chicago-Boston series, which I think is the greatest playoff series ever, we've seen two overtime games, one double overtime game, one triple overtime game. But, Jimmy, showing you love, I picked Boston to win last year. They won. I think this is the year of your LeBron. I think Cleveland over Boston in the Eastern Conference, L.A. over Denver in the West, Cleveland over L.A. in 7 games, and LeBron makes his ascent to Michael Jordan status.
What's the difference this year?
Kevin Garnett for the Boston Celtics. He's out for the remainder of the playoffs.
Okay. The R.
Man, are you kidding me? I don't know. I mean, I want to know how Larry Bird and Michael Jordan are doing in this thing. It's been a while since I've seen basketball. So I think I hear Arsalan. I've heard about the game was awesome. These are pretty evenly matched teams. It's almost a shame that at the end of it all, you know, some teams that are playing really well and have had really good seasons, there's only room for one at the top of the hill. But it's worth watching. It's good stuff.
My only reaction is that, you know, I got a note from my supervisor at NPR. Said any kind of overtime has to be approved by my supervisor. And yet 3 overtimes last night. I don't think there's any approval there.
Right. Don't wait on that check. That check ain't coming.
Exactly.
It's 3 times and a half.
Jimmy, what do you have to say?
Well, I mean, I'm all about the Cavs this year. You know, I mean, Cleveland, you know, you so rarely get to root for a sports team, you know, and LeBron is really representing, and I'm representing for LeBron. I got my shoes on, and I got my Air Zooms, and wow, I mean, and LeBron's doing a phenomenal job, and I think he's going to be the next generation. Well, obviously, he's going to be the next generation's Michael Jordan.
Can I ask something here? And to quote Jimmy, don't tase me. But don't you think the season is a little too long?
No,
I'm sorry.
82 games compared to the 161 in baseball. I mean, that's redonkulous.
Yeah, but they don't spend the entire baseball season running, you know, up and down, up and down. I don't know. No, I'm the only one.
It's fantastic.
Is it my gender showing again?
No, I prefer football. That's why I like football. Nice, short season.
17 weeks, absolutely. But no. honestly, speaking of handicapping things, you know, how do you handicap Justice David Souter's replacement for the Supreme Court?
That's a good question. Mm. What do you think? I mean, do you think, one of my questions. Do you think that Obama is under more pressure to name a woman, to add a second woman to the court, because he had such strong support from women, or the first Latino?
Well, I don't think he's under pressure to name a woman because he said when he was campaigning that he would like to name another woman. First of all, we know the precarious health of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, according to her doctor, Dr. Jim Bunning,
He made some really inappropriate comments about her health, which Ken, for some reason, feels a need to repeat.
The point is, everybody was looking at the Ginsburg possible replacement, John Paul Stevens, who's 89 years old. It was interesting that it was David Souter, who's 69 years old, relatively young, but I think he's had enough of it, and I think he was waiting for Obama to retire.
Right, and there's some African Americans out there who just would like to have a black justice.
To clarify, in addition to Clarence Thomas, who many feel doesn't represent the core sort of views of the African American voter, citizen, etc. But Ruben, forgive me, and I don't mean to make you the like spokesperson for all Latinos, but there is obviously a lot of interest in seeing the first Latino named to, or Latina,
I don't know,
named to the court.
I'm not going to hold my breath. I mean, Bill Clinton had 2 opportunities to do that. He missed both. Liberal Democrats aren't any better at putting Latinos on the Supreme Court, despite what it says in the
But do you think that seat is owed or designated? Do you think it has to be?
Well, I think it'd be a nice barrier to break. And here you are, you know, you had LBJ breaking that barrier by putting
Thurgood Marshall
mm-hmm.
on the Supreme Court, you know, 40 years ago. And I think a lot of Latinos obviously think they're due. It's only right. But my point is that even when Latinos turned out big for Bill Clinton, he had two chances to put somebody in the court. He didn't put a Latino on the court. I think it's an enormous blind spot for many liberal Democrats. And forget about Republicans. You know, I don't think they get it either. So
I think Bush wanted to.
We'll have this conversation about whether you want to need a woman or an African-American or a Latino or somebody from the Midwest or whatever. But the real issue, I think, is going to come down to policy. And you know where this is headed. Every single time there's a vacancy, we end up in a long and ugly abortion debate. And it is silly and lamentable that of all the issues out there, we always end up debating that one.
Very quick.
This time of year.
Well, Arslan has something quick to say.
Well, and as a resident lawyer in the barbershop, some names that are being floated out there are Elena Kagan, the current Solicitor General, Sonia Sotomayor, who is both a Latina judge in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, and Diane Wood, a federal judge in Chicago who used to teach at the University of Chicago Law School when Barack Obama was teaching there.
Yeah, this should be how people would come forward with these names, and African Americans were hung out to dry many times. Back in 1984, I remember. Mm-hmm. We got the word from Walter Mondale. Well, you know, I'm looking at Andrew Young as a possible vice presidential candidate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they get the credit for that. They put those names out there, all those African-American names, all those Latino names, and then some white guy gets the job. You know, I mean, obviously in the case of Ferraro, it was different when 84, but in most of these cases, the white guy gets the job, but they put the names out there. Oh, there was a Latino on the list, and there's an African-American on the list.
We have to leave it there. Jimmy, thank you. Jimmy?
Yep.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV1 Online. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego, where he has to come out of his shell. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He joined us from our studios in Washington. And Arsalan Iftikhar, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney, also joined us from our studios in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
I didn't leave the barbershop. The barbershop left me.
Happy anniversary.